This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Do not underestimate us. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Wednesday, November 8th. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump has sent another warning to North Korea, but also offered a hand. Hear his remarks from earlier today in South Korea.
New details on the background of the gunman who carried out the Texas church massacre on Sunday. Turns out he had escaped from a mental hospital.
No real surprises on Election Day. A pair of Democrats won gubernatorial races. Ralph Northam took Virginia while Phil Murphy was victorious in New Jersey.
And how America's love of caffeine has led to a bit of a problem for coffee shops.
The number of coffee shops in the U.S. has grown by about 16% in just the last 5 years. It's created a bit of a problem for both large chains and small chains and independents.
Wall Street Journal reporter Julie Jargon on the nation's coffee problem. Hear how coffee shops are starting to hurt. She's here in about 20 minutes. President Trump is extending a hand to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un while also warning him of the potential consequences of his nuclear weapons program. In an address to the South Korean National Assembly today, he said to the North, quote, "This is a very different administration than the United States has had in the past.
We will not allow American cities to be threatened with destruction. We will not be intimidated."
The president called on Mr. Kim to abandon his country's nuclear weapons program, saying if Pyongyang were to do so, quote, "We will offer a path that leads to a much better future.
We dream of highways connecting North and South, of cousins embracing cousins, and this nuclear nightmare replaced with the beautiful promise of peace."
Mr. Trump painted a bleak picture of life in North Korea, saying citizens bribe government officials to be sold into slavery rather than remain in their own country, and ethnically inferior unborn children are aborted or killed after birth. The president departed shortly afterward for China. Back here in the States, Democrat Ralph Northam has won the Virginia governorship, beating Republican Ed Gillespie. The Associated Press declared Mr. Northam, most recently the lieutenant governor, winner in the race to succeed Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe, giving their party another 4 years.
When someone's life is at stake, they don't care whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. They just want someone to help. That's the way that our administration will govern our commonwealth.
Mr. Northam, a 58-year-old doctor by trade, had 54% of the vote, while Mr. Gillespie had 45%. The win in Virginia, where the governorship has seesawed between parties in recent years, gave Democrats a double-barreled victory last night. In New Jersey's race for governor, voters, as expected, elected Democrat Phil Murphy over Republican Kim Guadagno, ending 2 terms of GOP control by unpopular Governor Chris Christie. Democratic Party officials are hoping for momentum heading into the 2018 midterms. Speaking of that, 1 year out from the midterm congressional elections, politics editor James Antle at the Washington Examiner says it's hard to imagine things looking much better for the Democrats on paper. If you trust polling, by the way, voters tell pollsters they prefer Democratic congressional candidates to Republicans, what they call the generic ballot, by an average of 10 points. Jim, what are you hearing?
I think if you're a Democrat, you've got to be pretty happy with where things stand a year out, at least as far as the House races are concerned. They're recruiting a lot of good candidates. They're doing well in terms of fundraising, except for the DNC, which isn't necessarily that important for recapturing the House. They're pretty confident that they can target 23 Republican-held districts that went for Hillary Clinton in 2016. Republicans only have a 24-seat majority, so that things are looking pretty good in the House for Democrats. Now, the Senate, the Republicans have a favorable map there because it's a lot of states that Trump won. There are 10 states that Trump won where Democrats are going to be defending incumbents the next year. So that's going to be a little bit tougher. Republicans only have 8 seats in total that they're defending, while Democrats are defending 25. So the Senate might be tough, but they're pretty confident about the way the House looks, at least this far out.
The confidence is, I guess, seems somewhat weird to me, only because I feel like the Democrats have zero momentum, right? The special House races they've lost, they've not done well on the state level, if you consider that somewhat of a training ground for future federal office holders. But they kind of have this long-term view, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they would argue that the special elections, they didn't win any of them mainly because they were being fought in very Republican-friendly territory, and that most of those candidates did outperform expectations. Now, that being said, that's right. I mean, if you know, these things are all looking good on paper, but they have to pan out in practice.
We're speaking with Jim Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner. His piece is called "One Year to the Midterms, Where the 2018 Races Stand." How much could things change over the course of the next year, especially with regards to what the White House is going through now in this special counsel investigation?
Oh, it's a lifetime away. I mean, there are bad things that could certainly happen for the White House in terms of people getting indicted, more things going wrong in the Russia investigation, more people being charged. There are also some positive things that could happen for them. They could get tax reform passed that might motivate more of the Republican base to turn out. Some people might feel that their personal financial situation is positively affected by it. So there's a lot that could happen. It shows that, we can assume that a lot of things are going to happen based on how poll numbers and things like that and fundraising figures look a year out, but a lot could change in a year.
Is it a given that the president and his party in office will lose seats in the midterms? Does seem that way, at least what past history, right?
Historically speaking, that's generally true. 18 of the last 20 midterm elections, the president's party has lost seats. The two exceptions kind of prove the rule. 1998, Democrats gained seats under Bill Clinton. That was during the whole impeachment saga. There was a little bit of a public backlash against that. And then under George W. Bush in 2002, Republicans gained seats. But that was in the aftermath of the 9/11 attack, so there was certainly a lot of approval bounce for Bush during that time period.
How much of a role will the, if Republicans get through tax legislation, how much of a role will that play?
It's hard to know how much of a role it'll play, but Republicans certainly don't think failure is an option on that. I think they think that if they don't pass something on taxes, and they also haven't done anything on health care, that they're really going to have trouble motivating people to vote, and the Democratic base is pretty motivated. So that certainly the negative aspect of not doing it, I think a lot of people are pretty confident that would be pretty bad. If they do pass it, how positive it will be, that's a little bit more open to interpretation.
Thanks, Jim. That is Jim Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us on this Wednesday. More stunning revelations about the gunman who killed 26 people at a church in Sutherland Springs, Texas on Sunday. We're now learning that Devin Kelly escaped from a New Mexico mental health facility 5 years ago. Mr. Kelly, at the time, was in the Air Force. 5 days before his escape, he was sent there for pretrial confinement for charges he had assaulted his wife and young stepson. He was eventually convicted in a general court-martial. Texas Senator John Cornyn reacted about the Air Force not submitting Mr. Kelly's name to the FBI after that verdict, as required by law, something that would have prevented him from legally buying guns.
We intend to work with colleagues and the administration to come up with legislation that will both ensure the fact that the federal government, particularly the Department of Defense and all the military branches, comply with the law.
After escaping, Mr. Kelly fled about 12 miles across the state line to El Paso, Texas, where he was picked up by police. He was convicted in 2013 on 2 counts of domestic assault on his spouse and her child. He was sentenced to 1 year in a military jail and given a bad conduct discharge. It's 21 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon seizing his party's first major Trump-era victory, Democrat Ralph Northam, a neurologist and Army veteran, beat back a charge from longtime Republican operative Ed Gillespie in the race for Virginia governor. Northam says it's time to end divisiveness.
We need to close the wounds that divide and bring unity to Virginia. whether you voted for me or not. We are all Virginians.
In New Jersey, Democrat Phil Murphy scored a victory over Lieutenant Governor Kim Guandano. In Maine, voters backed a measure to expand Medicaid coverage under the Affordable Care Act. President Trump will push China on trade and North Korea during a two-day visit. In the hours before arriving in Beijing today, Trump used an address to the National Assembly in Seoul to again denounce North Korea.
The regime has made numerous lethal incursions in South Korea, attempted to assassinate senior leaders, attacked South Korean ships.
The president called on North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons program. The Texas church massacre is providing a familiar frustration for law enforcement. FBI agents are unable to unlock the gunman's encrypted cell phone to learn what evidence it might hold. Christopher Combs, the special agent in charge of the FBI's San Antonio division, says agents have been unable to get into the cell phone belonging to Devin Kelly, who slaughtered much of the congregation in the middle of a Sunday service. Roy Halladay, a two-time Cy Young Award winner who pitched a perfect game and a playoff no-hitter for the Philadelphia Phillies, died yesterday when his private plane crashed into the Gulf of Mexico. He was 40 years old. Pasco County Sheriff Chris Nocco says Halladay's plane went down around noon off Halladay, Florida, north of Tampa.
It's a sad day for us here in Pasco County. It's a sad day for Tampa Bay. It's a sad day for anybody who loves Major League Baseball. But it's even sadder day for the family.
Halladay, who retired after the 2013 season, was an amateur pilot who often posted on social media about small planes. And if you'd like to be a little bit chattier, you'll like this news. Twitter today rolled out 280-character limit to users, ending its 140-character restriction.
That's a dreadful decision. It's like everybody is publishing their own newspaper online.
Oh, come on. It's not that long.
280 characters. It takes so long to read.
Oh, come on.
I need pictures. 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. America's coffee market is getting too crowded. Consumers hankering for caffeine and quality coffee has fueled a big build-out of cafes in the last 5 years, especially in dense urban areas like New York, San Fran, and Portland, Oregon. But Wall Street Journal reporter Julie Jargon says the boom in coffee shops is starting to hurt business owners. Julie, how so?
The number of coffee shops in the U.S. has grown by about 16% in just the last 5 years, and it's created a bit of a problem for both large chains and small chains and independents.
Wow. This might be too in the weeds, so just tell me so, but the growth, is it largely coming from these independent mom and pops, or is it from the large chains like a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts?
Well, it's coming from both. I mean, Starbucks is obviously the big contributor to the overall industry, and they've been opening hundreds of new coffee shops in recent years. Dunkin' Donuts has been expanding into the western United States from the Northeast. And then there's been a proliferation of small mom-and-pop independent coffee shops and some small chains that have been expanding. So it's kind of a combination of growth among all different segments of the coffee industry. And all of the competition is starting to have an effect.
And did you say that Dunkin' Donuts is starting to tap the brake a little bit in terms of expansion?
Yeah, they have decided to scale back the pace of their new coffee shop openings at a time when they're trying to kind of do a rehaul of their actual coffee shops. They're trying to redesign them to be more convenient to the on-the-go consumer. And while they haven't come up with a final plan, they're testing a variety of things, including more drive-through Dunkin' Donut locations, as well as Dunkin' Donut places that have little cubbies where people can just come in and pick up a mobile order and find their coffee or their food item just waiting in a cubby and grab it to go without having any interaction with a person at the shop.
Oh boy, why such growth? By the way, does coffee happen to have a particularly high profit margin?
Yeah, well, for at least a long time, it was a pretty easy business to get into, and anybody could open a coffee shop. You know, you could buy beans and you know, rent a space and get some equipment and off you go. But rent has become really high in a lot of big metropolitan markets recently, and the cost of labor has also gone up as cities across the country have instituted minimum wage increases. So while it was once fairly high margin, it's become harder to make a profit in coffee shops these days.
Thanks, Julie. Wall Street Journal reporter Julie Jargon, who covers the restaurant industry. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, the holidays are fast approaching. Order gifts for everyone on your list with a click of a mouse. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get the family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code DEAL in the search bar. That's 75% off. Omaha Steaks offers the most flavorful, tender-aged beef, aged for 21 days to unlock the full flavors of the cuts, hand-trimmed and vacuum-sealed. They also have veggies, desserts, appetizers, fresh seafood, and so much more. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving an exclusive savings for our listeners. Listen to everything that you'll get for less than $50. Two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus four additional kielbasa sausages free. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code DEAL in the search bar, and get a 75% savings. It's the gift guaranteed to be a hit.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Wednesday, November 8th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines, another warning from Trump to North Korea. Democrats win governor's races in New Jersey and Virginia. The Texas church gunman had escaped from a mental hospital. Twitter puts the kibosh on creativity by allowing 280 characters for everyone. Country Music Association Awards tonight in Nashville. Reports say three UCLA basketball players have been arrested in China for shoplifting, released on bail. An Amazon key where delivery drivers drop your box inside your front door begins today in 37 cities. The national database designed to vet gun buyers is coming under criticism from Congress and others. The Wall Street Journal says critics claim the U.S. military routinely neglects to send names to this FBI list with court-martial records as required by federal law. Meanwhile, AR-15-style rifles have become the weapon of choice in recent mass shootings, including the Texas church shooting Sunday, Las Vegas, the Orlando nightclub last year, and Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012. Reporter Bart Jansen at USA Today says the manufacture of rifles more than doubled in the past decade. Bart, what do you have?
Well, we just thought we'd heard the phrase AR-15 or an AR-15 style rifle with many of the recent attacks, and it turns out it is a weapon that has been used in most of the recent attacks that you'd remember. This Texas church shooting, the Las Vegas shooting, an AR-15 was among the 23 weapons that that gunman had accumulated in his hotel room, all the way back to the Orlando nightclub shooting and also the Sandy Hook Elementary School. It just seemed to be a recurring theme, and part of that is because this is just the civilian version of an M16 rifle, and so it's just sort of a common rifle that the people are used to seeing, used to talking about, and so it has been used in many of these recent shootings.
Now, there are different varieties, right? And I'm coming to you as somebody who knows zero about guns. So this is an AR-15 is a rifle, but it's not necessarily automatic or semi-automatic?
They're called semi-automatic because it requires a pull of the trigger for each bullet that is fired, and so you know, if you were in the military or if you modified the gun in an illegal way, you could get it to just hold down the trigger and fire as a machine gun. But for civilian use, it's called semi-automatic. And so then there are the possibility for having accessories, such as the Las Vegas gunman had, called bump stocks, where it basically, the gun uses the recoil of the shooting to then bounce back against your shoulder to send the trigger into your finger a little more rapidly. And so it's sort of hard to describe, but it's sort of a bouncing motion that allows you to pull the trigger faster. And so the police on that scene actually thought they were facing an automatic weapon because the bullets were being fired so quickly. But it's called semi-automatic, and the AR-15 style weapon is actually made by dozens of manufacturers. So it's just sort of a, you know, the rifle that you would tend to see with a soldier walking on patrol. That is the look of the weapon, but they can be manufactured by many different companies.
We're speaking with Bart Jansen, reporter at USA Today. His piece is called Why AR-15 Style Rifles Are Common Among Mass Shootings. All right, and I thought it was interesting, too, because the gun store owners or the experts you talked to said the AR-15 is popular, really, because of reputation.
Yeah, what we were finding was, you know, rifles overall have gained a great deal of popularity in recent years. ATF counted nearly 3.7 million rifles manufactured in 2015, and that eclipsed the number of pistols sold that year. The National Rifle Association estimates there's something like 8 million AR-15s owned across the country.
You said, too, their popularity kind of took off, at least for a spell, during the Obama administration. Explain that.
Yeah, what we heard from gun experts was that there was concern during the Obama administration that he would work to have stricter gun control. You know, some people will actually say, you know, the government might try to come and take your guns away. You know, nothing like that ever happened. Congress would be a check on that about any sort of gun control legislation, but the concern was definitely there, and so the manufacture of rifles just took off tremendously during recent years. When Obama was elected in 2008, there were 1.7 million manufactured, and as I said, in 2015, nearly 3.7, so more than twice as many rifles per year, and you know, that's just each year, more and more get made.
It's Bart Jansen at USA Today. It is 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well with the username at Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you're a fan of the hit Netflix show Stranger Things, but for one reason or another haven't been able to binge the entire second season yet, I'm raising my hand here, you might want to work a little harder to keep your nose clean and stay out of jail. The Huffington Post says that a Michigan police department believes it has found a surefire way to deter people from a life of crime. Stranger Things spoilers. The East Lansing Police Department posted a tweet recently that threatened to reveal key plot points for the sci-fi show's second season. "We've taped Stranger Things spoilers all over the walls of our jail this week," the tweet said. "Some extra motivation for you to not end up there." Unfortunately, the plan may have backfired, with one person contemplating getting arrested just to verify the tweet. Others took it to heart, saying that that would be the worst punishment ever, while another Twitter user had little sympathy, saying that anyone who hasn't watched the show should be in prison anyway.
Oh, wow, that's strong.
Right, so that's directed right at you, by the way.
Yeah, correct.
Who I'm sure has not seen the show.
No, I have not.
No, and I'm kind of in this boat. I've only seen two episodes. I think it's a 9-episode season. I've only seen two episodes myself. Okay. So I got to, you know, kind of watch my P's and Q's this week if I'm traveling through Michigan.
I had interviewed John Jurgensen from the Wall Street Journal,
yes,
who had kind of written this big thing about the 80s things that appear,
yeah,
subtly inside the show. And I had mentioned this to my wife. So she started watching a little bit, and she's struggling to get into it, like through the first couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And I think, as John had referenced, like you need some time because it's still resetting, I guess, what had happened
right
in the first season.
Yes, it's tough. You got to watch the whole thing, really.
You know what it is, though? I finally, like, even the show that is must watch TV for me right now, which is Blue Bloods,
yes,
on CBS Friday nights, even I'm struggling there. There's something about, like, it just lacks the passion this year for me for some,
yeah,
reason.
Yeah.
Or I'm getting older and crankier. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But right now, I don't know that there's anything I'd miss on television.
I'm kind of actually in the same boat. Besides Stranger Things,
yeah,
I'm TV. I'm just not making the effort like,
yeah,
I used to. I think we're TV network's worst nightmare right now.
Well, and the kids. I mean, the kids, yes, keep us plenty busy, so there's that.
Too many late soccer nights for you.
Yeah, true.
And the Winnipeg Jets, Gordon, have an important question for the internet. What should they name their new security puppy? According to NHL.com, as part of a step up in arena security, the team has introduced an in-house security dog team trained to sniff out explosives. explosives, and now they're asking for help naming the adorable black puppy, no doubt the youngest and least intimidating of the group. Jets season ticket holders were asked to submit names, and the team narrowed it down to four finalists. No, Doggy McDogface did not make the cut, though I'm sure more than one person tried to sneak that one past the goalie. The vote is now open to everyone and closes at midnight tonight. The four finalists are not super exciting, but they are all fitting dog names: Benny, Ducky, Lenny, and Scout. Yeah.
Come on, with that boring as
exactly. Just throw in a Doggy McDogface and just see what happens. You don't have to tell everybody, you know,
right,
which one actually wins.
By the way, I was talking to a guy who's a handler of a dog at MetLife Stadium.
Okay.
Who's like private security. The dog roams the parking lot, yes, searching for trouble. He's trained. The dog is trained on like 37 different scents that it can detect that are tied to explosives.
Yes.
That's amazing. By the way, the Winnipeg Jets in second place in their division. A winning Jets franchise. How about that?
Huh? Yes. The only one.
13 minutes now in front of the hour. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Well, love it or hate it, Twitter's tweets can now extend to 280 characters. That's twice the prior limit. The company had been testing the limit with a small amount of users since September after it found that the 140-character limit was a major cause of frustration. This is Twitter trying to retain and add more users. Twitter said that historically, 9% of tweets in English hit the 140-character limit, often resulting in time spent editing and sometimes abandoning tweets. Twitter product manager Eliza Rosen said in a statement that during the trial, when people needed to use more than 140 characters, they tweeted more easily and more often. But in a statement to the Wall Street Journal, she said people tweeted below 140 most of the time, and the brevity of Twitter remained. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Board of voters in two states picked replacements for their term-limited governors in contests seen as an early referendum on the presidency of Donald Trump. In swing state Virginia, Democratic Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam defeated Republican Ed Gillespie. In New Jersey, front-running Democrat Phil Murphy overcame Republican Lieutenant Governor Kim Guadagno.
New Jersey sent an unmistakable message to the entire nation. We are better than this.
Elsewhere, Democrat Bill de Blasio won a second term as mayor of New York City. In Boston, Mayor Marty Walsh won a second four-year term. A former Virginia news anchor whose journalist girlfriend was fatally shot during a live broadcast in 2015 has defeated a Republican incumbent for a seat in the State House. Chris Hurst was living with fellow journalist Allison Parker when she and a cameraman were killed by a former co-worker while reporting for WDBJ-TV. After the shooting, Hurst became the public face of the grieving Roanoke station. The gunman who killed more than two dozen at a small-town Texas church briefly escaped from a mental health facility in New Mexico in 2012. Reports also note that Devin Kelly was once caught trying to bring guns onto a military base and threatened superior officers there. Kelly was also named as a suspect in a 2013 sexual assault. That's at least three missed opportunities that might have offered law enforcement a way to stop Kelly from having access to guns. After a brief truce with China to cooperate in North Korea, President Trump arrived in Beijing today amid mounting U.S. trade complaints, with limited prospects for progress on market access, technology policy, and other sore points. The strains between the world's two biggest economies are fueling anxiety among global companies and advocates of free trade that they could retreat into protectionism, dragging down growth. And in other news from China, three UCLA basketball players, including high-profile freshman LiAngelo Ball, have been detained for alleged shoplifting. The Bruins are in China to begin their college basketball season Saturday in Shanghai against Georgia Tech. Details are unclear, although ESPN is reporting that the incident occurred at a Louis Vuitton store. Ball is the younger brother of Lonzo Ball, who played for UCLA last year, and whose father, LeVar Ball, has attracted attention for his attempts to market his sons.
Just a separate question. How legit is the Louis Vuitton store in China? Just throwing that out there.
They wanted the goods, so perhaps it's all up and up.
6 minutes now in front of the hour.
Hit toward third. Castro has it. Spins. Fires. A perfect game! Roy Halladay has thrown the second perfect game in Philadelphia Phillies history.
Former Phillies and Blue Jays great Roy Halladay died in a plane crash in Florida yesterday, crashing into the Gulf of Mexico in his small aircraft. SBNation.com is helping us remember the heights the 40-year-old reached during his career. While he never won a World Series, he did just about everything else you can do in baseball. Selected for the All-Star game 8 times. That puts him 94th, by the way, on the all-time list for most All-Star game roster appearances. That's out of all players, not just pitchers. Won 2 Cy Young Awards, including one in each league. Received 100% of first-place votes in 2010 when he won the Cy Young, a season in which he led the league with 250 innings, 9 complete games, 4 shutouts, and 21 wins. Of course, he also threw that perfect game against the Marlins in the spring of 2010. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.